Imagine waking up in your town, just throwing off the covers and walking into the bathroom to wash your face.
Right, just a totally normal morning.
Exactly. You turn on the tap. It's this entirely mundane action, something you've literally done tens of thousands of times without a second thought.
Yeah, we all do.
But as that cold water hits your hands, you don't realize that the complex, heavily automated network of pumps and pressure valves and chemical treatment basins delivering that water to your sink, well, it's currently under siege by a foreign nation state.
I mean, for the vast majority of people, the infrastructure beneath their feet is just completely invisible.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a miracle of modern engineering that we take completely for granted, right up until the precise second it breaks down.
Which is exactly why we're here. The mission of our deep dive today is to unpack a moment when that exact scenario moved from a, a theoretical nightmare into
Yeah,
reality.
the Minnesota attacks.
Right. We are analyzing this unprecedented 48-hour cyber attack that systematically struck more than 30 municipal water and wastewater systems across Minnesota. This was between July 26th and July 27th, 2026.
And looking at the stack of sources we have for this deep dive, the recent CISA advisories, EPA enforcement reports, the global threat intelligence analysis, the sheer scale of this is just staggering.
It really is.
It forces this massive shift in how we understand modern conflict. I mean, the front lines are no longer confined to overseas territories or military bases.
They're right here.
Exactly. They are in the literal pipes beneath our streets. The infrastructure that keeps your daily life functioning, that keeps a city inhabitable, is now a recognized active battleground.
Because the automated control systems managing these plants, they're essentially the nervous system of a city.
That's a great way to put it.
They regulate pressure to keep pipes from bursting. They monitor chlorine levels so the water is safe to drink. They manage wastewater flow so it doesn't back up into the streets. And if an attacker paralyzes that nervous system, you really have to wonder how a city survives the next 48 hours.
Well, to understand the survival mechanics, we have to look at the ground reality of how different cities in Minnesota actually experience this.
Right.
The contrast between them really exposes the terrifying vulnerability that made a coordinated multi-city strike possible in the first place.
So let's look at Bram first. It's a small town, population of about 1,700.
Okay.
On the morning of July 27th, their water treatment plant just went dark, like completely disabled.
Wow.
The operators woke up to find they had zero automated control over their municipal wells. They did manage to recover service after about 2 hours, but I mean, that is a full catastrophic loss of control.
Yeah, and contrast that with Plymouth, much larger city, population around 80,000.
Right. Plymouth was a different story.
Plymouth didn't lose service, but not because their systems weren't targeted. Their IT division noticed anomalous network behavior, realized a coordinated intrusion was underway, and took extreme preemptive action.
They just pulled the plug, basically.
Literally, they dispatched personnel to physically disconnect the cellular communication equipment at two of their water towers and multiple wastewater lift stations. They severed the network connection and forced the entire massive system to run on manual overrides.
Which is incredible quick thinking. And we saw South St. Paul manage to use contingency procedures to stave off major impacts. Maple Plain actually declared a local state of emergency to marshal resources.
Yeah.
But I want to inject a vital point from the Minnesota Department of Health here before we go further into mechanics. During this entire 48-hour ordeal, no drinking water quality was compromised.
Right, that's crucial.
No boil water advisories had to be issued.
Which is incredibly fortunate considering the blast radius here. But the mechanics of how 30 different municipal systems could be compromised simultaneously, I mean, that is what should keep everyone awake at night.
Yeah, how did they get in everywhere at once?
The entry point wasn't a cleverly disguised phishing email or, a guest password. The attackers exploited CVE 2021-22681.
Ah, right. Which has a severity score of 9.8 out of 10.
Yeah.
I mean, a 9.8 is basically a digital air raid
It
siren.
really is.
And our threat intelligence briefings explain that this isn't a software bug that can be patched with a quick Tuesday morning update.
Yeah.
It's a fundamental architectural flaw in Rockwell Automation's Logix controllers.
Exactly. The cryptographic key used to authenticate communication with these controllers is embedded directly into the software itself, the Studio 5000 Logix Designer software.
Right.
And it's in a recoverable form.
So the manufacturer baked the authentication key directly into the design
They
software.
did.
I'm trying to think of how to visualize this. It's like building a state-of-the-art bank vault. But to make it easier for the bank managers, the vault company just embeds the master key into the metal of the front door.
That's exactly what it's like.
And now they are telling the world they can't change the locks without replacing every single vault on the planet.
Yes, because to fix it, Rockwell would have to redesign the entire authentication architecture from scratch. Doing that breaks backward compatibility with every single legacy controller already deployed in the field.
Oh, man.
So if an attacker extracts that embedded key, they can perfectly impersonate legitimate engineering software. They get direct, unauthenticated access to any internet-facing logics controller.
So they don't even need a stolen password.
Nope. They just connect, and suddenly they have engineering-level privileges to rewrite the logic of how the water is chemically treated.
And the global exposure here is staggering.
Yeah.
The threat intel notes there are 5,219 of these vulnerable hosts exposed to the public internet globally.
Yeah, and nearly 75% of them are sitting right here in the United States.
Which really begs the question, if this vulnerability is unpatchable and it gives attackers God mode access to industrial hardware, why not just unplug every single one of these controllers from the internet immediately?
Well, in a perfect world, yes, you absolutely would.
Right.
But industrial environments require continuous uptime. You can't just reboot a power grid or water treatment plant on a whim.
Sure.
And for small municipalities, they simply don't have the staffing to send an engineer driving 30 miles out to a remote pumping station every time a pressure alarm goes off in the middle of the night.
They need to see it remotely.
They demand remote visibility. So they connect that industrial controller to the public internet, using cheap cellular modems, completely exposing their town's water supply.
Okay, so knowing that this master key is just floating out there on the internet, who actually decided to use it against Minnesota?
The prime suspect, according to the threat intelligence analysis, is a group called Cyber Aftrangers.
Right, and they are directly tied to Iran's IRGC Cyber Electronic Command, which was sanctioned by the U.S. Treasury in early 2024.
Yeah. And their operational evolution over a very short period is pretty alarming. You can track their sophistication escalating across four distinct phases.
Okay, let's break those down.
In 2020, they were largely a nuisance, a propaganda group making fabricated claims about breaching infrastructure.
Just making noise.
Exactly. But by late 2023, they entered phase two. They realized they didn't need to fabricate breaches if they just scanned for default passwords on internet-exposed Unitronic systems.
Oh, that's the methodology they used to hit the Municipal Water Authority in Aliquippa, Pennsylvania, right?
Yes, exactly. Forcing Aliquippa into manual operations.
But going from guessing default passwords to what happened in Minnesota, that's a massive leap in capability.
It is. Phase 3 in 2024 and 2025 saw them building custom Linux malware called IO Control, and this was designed specifically to pivot through industrial environments.
Building custom malware for industrial control systems requires deep engineering knowledge.
It absolutely does. And that brings us to phase 4, which is happening right now. They aren't guessing passwords anymore.
They are actively weaponizing this unpatchable 9.8 flaw.
Right. CVE-2021-22681, they are directly modifying the logic on the controllers themselves.
We really have to look at the geopolitical context driving this escalation, though. Based on the intelligence timelines and, you know, keeping this strictly to the objective sequence of events, infrastructure has basically become the primary theater for geopolitical reciprocity.
A tit-for-tat escalation.
Exactly. Between the U.S. and Iran.
The timeline is critical here. Between February and May of 2026, the U.S. and Iran were engaged in armed conflict during Operation Epic Fury.
Right.
But even after the kinetic ceasefire, the cyber operations just accelerated. On June 10th, U.S. cyber strikes destroyed two Iranian water reservoirs in Sirik during a severe heat wave.
Cutting water to over 20,000 people.
Yeah. And the response was instantaneous. The very next day, June 11th, the Iranian-attributed group Handala breached the California Water Service billing systems.
Wow, next day.
And by July 23rd, Handala issued public warnings that U.S. water and electricity networks were active targets.
And then 3 days later, Minnesota gets hit.
Exactly. And the U.S. government actually saw this escalation coming.
Right. They put out a warning.
4 days before the Minnesota shutdowns, CISA, the NSA, the FBI, the EPA, and the Department of Energy published a joint advisory, AA26097A.
I remember reading that. The threat wasn't just isolated to Rockwell devices anymore. The attackers had expanded their targeting to Schneider Electric and Siemens hardware.
Right.
The advisory gets into the mechanics of how they are manipulating the systems, and it's frankly terrifying.
It really is.
They're using something called add-on instructions, or AOIs. Our sources detail how the attackers insert malicious code to subtly disable safety shutdowns and pressure alarms. But while they're doing that, they manipulate the telemetry data going back to the operator screens.
The mechanism is just insidious. The malware intercepts the real-time sensor data. So say a pressure valve is dangerously overpressurizing. The malware replaces that with spoofed normal-looking data before it ever reaches the human-machine interface.
So the operator, looking at the screen, sees a perfectly functioning plant while the physical equipment is literally being pushed toward catastrophic failure.
Exactly.
It's the digital equivalent of zooping a security camera feed. Mm. Like the guard sees a quiet, empty hallway on the monitor, mm-hmm. but just off camera, the vault is being emptied.
That's exactly what's happening.
But, you know, stepping back from the technical brilliance of the malware for a second, I'm stuck on the scale of this conflict.
Yeah.
A water plant in Brahm, Minnesota, with 1,700 people, is now a legitimate active theater of war between two nation states. How on earth is a local mayor supposed to defend against the IRGC?
They cannot. They just can't.
Right.
It's a fundamental mismatch in capabilities.
Oh.
We are expecting local municipalities to defend themselves against elite state-sponsored military hacking units.
It's absurd.
The local utilities are fighting nation states with neighborhood watch budgets. It highlights this massive structural crisis in U.S. water security.
Yeah, the numbers from the EPA enforcement alerts are just brutal.
They are.
There are roughly 150,000 to 170,000 water systems in the U.S. And when the EPA conducts inspections, 70% of those systems violate basic security assessment requirements.
70%?
An Inspector General report recently audited 1,000 drinking water systems and found critical or high-severity vulnerabilities in 97 of them.
Wow.
And those 97 vulnerable systems alone serve nearly 27 million people.
But the operational reality on the ground makes those failure rates entirely predictable.
How so?
Well, many of these rural or small-town utilities rely on a single part-time IT contractor.
Oh, man.
And to manage the operational technology remotely, they lean on whatever is cheapest and easiest. They use consumer-grade remote access software like TeamViewer or AnyDesk.
Using TeamViewer to manage a municipal water supply.
Yeah.
It's like securing the Hope Diamond inside a state-of-the-art titanium vault,
yeah.
but putting the control panel on a public iPad at a local coffee shop.
Exactly. You are bypassing the physical security completely. And then combining that with terrible network segmentation. The source materials emphasize that it is incredibly common to find an industrial environment where the business email server is sitting on the exact same network segment as the water pressure valves.
Oh, wow. Which means if an employee in the billing department clicks a bad link in a phishing email, the attacker lands on the business network.
Yes.
But because it's a flat network with no segmentation, the attacker can just move laterally, completely unimpeded, right over to the industrial hardware controlling the chemical dosing.
Yeah, it's a straight shot.
When convenience trumps security and critical infrastructure, the blast radius of a single compromised email jumps from the digital world straight into the physical world.
This is a systemic crisis.
Yeah.
So the immediate focus really has to shift to survival. Given that we have an unpatchable flaw out there and highly sophisticated threat actors actively exploiting it, CISA has laid out a blueprint for defense.
Let's talk about that blueprint. The first non-negotiable step. Disconnect any controller with a public IP address from the internet immediately.
Has to be done.
Since the authentication flaw requires zero credentials, every exposed device is just a sitting duck.
Right. But for utilities where remote access is deemed absolutely essential for operations, they have to put that access behind secure industrial gateways requiring multi-factor authentication.
MFA is critical.
Then you address the network architecture.
No.
Strict segmentation between the business environment and the industrial environment is mandatory.
Right. A compromise in the billing department must hit a firewall before it can ever touch the water pumps.
Exactly. But perhaps the most elegant defense mechanism mentioned in the advisories is a physical one.
Oh, I loved reading about this.
Utilizing the run mode switch on the controllers.
I found this fascinating. So by physically turning a key or flipping a hardware switch on the actual controller to run mode, you override software commands.
Yep.
It mechanically blocks anyone from remotely modifying the controller's logic. Even if an attacker gets engineering-level access through the network, the hardware itself rejects their commands.
It's brilliant. Plus, utilities have to maintain offline, disconnected backups of their logic. So if the system is maliciously wiped, they can restore operations from a known, clean state without paying a ransom.
But, you know, implementing this defense in depth strategy, it costs money.
It does.
Small towns don't have the tax base for behavioral monitoring software and industrial firewalls. The report stressed the need for dedicated federal funding, like grant programs from the EPA and CISA, specifically targeted at rural utilities.
Yeah, and we also need mandatory cybersecurity compliance and a national disclosure standard for incidents.
Oh, absolutely.
Minnesota State IT Services acted with total transparency, which allowed us to study this, but so many of these intrusions go unreported because utilities fear the public backlash.
Sure, but you know, funding and compliance are part of the solution, but the policy discussions are increasingly focusing on the responsibility of the vendors themselves.
This is a huge point. Companies like Rockwell, Schneider, and Siemens made architectural choices years ago that prioritized convenience and legacy compatibility over fundamental security.
I really struggle to see how the vendors escape liability here.
Right.
If they built the lock with the master key printed on the outside, shouldn't they be footing the bill for the structural upgrades? Passing the cost of industrial gateways and complex segmentation onto rural taxpayers feels entirely backward.
It's incredibly frustrating.
The intelligence briefings argue these vendors must step up. They need to provide cheap, secure gateways, offer free migration services off these vulnerable platforms, and develop minimum security standards so inherently insecure equipment can't even be legally certified for critical infrastructure moving forward.
The burden of securing national infrastructure cannot solely rest on the shoulders of a part-time IT contractor.
No, it can't.
If infrastructure is the new battleground, the defense has to be systemic, from the manufacturer all the way down to the local operator.
Well, the 48 hours in Minnesota served as a massive, unavoidable wake-up call for all of us.
It really did.
We got a terrifying glimpse into a future where essential civic services are paralyzed remotely from halfway across the globe. And the fact that the drinking water stayed safe was a combination of quick thinking, like the Plymouth IT department physically ripping out the cellular modems, and honestly, a tremendous amount of luck.
We got very lucky.
But relying on luck as a national defense strategy means we're running on borrowed time.
We absolutely are. And if we look closely at the threat intelligence, there is a chilling final thought for you to consider.
Okay, what is it?
Despite having God mode access to 30 water systems, the core Cyber F-Thringers group deliberately avoided changing the actual water chemistry.
Oh, wow.
Intelligence analysts assess they exhibited restraint to avoid crossing a catastrophic geopolitical red line that would undoubtedly trigger a kinetic military response from the United States.
So they turned the pumps off to cause chaos, but they knew better than to actually poison the well.
Precisely.
Yeah.
But here is the escalating threat. Their techniques, their custom IO control malware, and their playbook have now proliferated to over 60 affiliated proxy hacktivist groups. These proxy groups are enthusiastically replicating the operations, but they lack the rigid discipline, the strategic calculation, and the restraint of a state military command.
They just want to watch it burn.
Exactly. So the question you have to ask yourself, is this what happens when the next hacker to breach these unpatchable internet-connected systems isn't a calculating nation-state playing a geopolitical chess match, but an undisciplined rogue actor who simply decides to turn the very water you drink into a silent weapon before anyone even notices?
Wow. That is a thought that will definitely stay with you the next time you turn on the tap. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Stay curious, stay informed, and we'll see you next time.